This is the Faherty Podcast presented by Farmers Insurance.
Thank you for that thunderous applause. You were obviously expecting somebody else. Yeah. Instead, all you get is little old me welcoming you to season 9 of Faherty. That's right. Despite a continuous string of dumpster fires, Golf Channel has somehow invited me back yet again. I guess some people never give up hope. Just like I never gave up pursuing tonight's guest, I wouldn't say I've been stalking Fred Couples, but that's just because I don't agree with the legal definition of stalking. So we're here at Twin Dolphin.
Yeah.
What's your design philosophy?
To have everyone stare at the ocean.
Persistence is not one of my strongest attributes, but I've been trying to get Freddie onto my show since this show began. And here it is, the start of season 9, and I finally caught up with him in picturesque Cabo San Lucas.
We just wanted to give it beauty and leave it like Cabo. So we've left it kind of deserty, just a real, real pretty course with what we got.
Freddie, thanks for having us down here at Twin Dolphin, your new golf course here in Mexico. You've managed to weasel out of this interview about 4 times.
I knew you were going to get to that. I didn't think it'd be in the first 5 seconds. And we've tried to set, or I have tried to set this up. You have solidified it, and then I don't want to say canceled, but I'm really excited to do this and to have you down here.
You've been kind of slippery. I'm delighted to have you captured at last.
Yes.
Let's go back to the beginning. Tell me, well, you grew up in Seattle on Beacon Hill, close to the Jefferson Park, your municipal golf course. What kind of a part did that play in your early golf life?
I first grew up on a par 3 course at Jefferson Park. So they had an 18-hole course and a par 3 course. And so as a 9 and 10-year-old, for some reason, I just liked to play the par 3 course better. And then at maybe the age of 11, I got a job at the driving range. So there was a 9-holer, an 18-holer, and a driving range that people would come, you know, and pay to hit golf balls. So it wasn't like now you go and you show up, you play, and you get free balls. There you paid money. So I helped pick the range up at night. Every day in the summer, my mom usually would give me $5 as I got a little over $3.50 to play the golf course, and then $1.50 for a burger and a Coke. And I would stay there from, she dropped me off at 8 in the morning till 6 at night. And then I'd go home and have dinner and then come back up and help pick the range up.
Did you ever sneak through the fence?
Oh, I climbed the fence the second round every time. And a lot of times they'd come get me. So my friend Jay and I, we'd go to the 4th hole because that was an easy place to climb a fence. And then they'd sometimes come out and get us, and other times they'd look the other way. But basically, once I started to play in a few junior tournaments and do okay, then they kind of just said, you know, pay once and go.
Is it hyperbole, apocryphal, or the truth that you were banned from using driver on the range?
At what age? Probably 15.
Yeah?
Yeah, because they had built a rec center at the end of it. And I think, honestly, it was probably 280 to the back of the range, but then there was a fence. But it was, all these stories are great, but it's usually with the wind. So I would find the hottest range balls we could, which would sometimes be the newer ones. And obviously with downwinds, we would get in trouble because they knew really who it was. There were only a couple of us that could do it. But that is a story that's true.
You won back-to-back state high school championships. Were you kind of heavily recruited?
You know, I was, but I wouldn't know what heavily recruited is. I had a chance to go down, of all places, to Stanford. I don't know if I could even gone through 1 year of that, but Arizona State, a couple other places. And most of those were come see us, play, we'll watch you and see how you do. And I just didn't have the money to go to California and then to Arizona and play a couple rounds. Coach Williams found out about me through probably a kid that was from Spokane that was on the U of H team, Chris Mitchell. And then he started calling. And then it got to the point where every Sunday night he'd call and I'd have my mom talk to him. And my mom thought he would be great coach for me to go there. And as it turned out, it was a great school for me to go to. We wanted everyone to see the ocean. And when they're done playing,
Fred and I have much in common. We both played professional golf. We're both ridiculously handsome.
Oh, yeah.
And we both spent way too much time with Jim Nance. For me, it was at CBS covering golf. And for Freddie, it started in his freshman dorm.
You had a very famous roommate
at the University of Houston, Jim Nance.
Yes.
I always wonder, was he in the bottom bunk playing with his imaginary microphone?
Well, actually, I had three famous roommates. John Horn, who played the tour a little bit,
yeah.
And Blaine McAllister,
yeah.
Who's won five times and is a really, really good player. And then the most famous guy in the room was Jim Nance. So there were several nights he'd come back and he would play us who he'd interview, whether it was Nolan Ryan, Muhammad Ali one night. That was fun for me. I'm a sport nut.
Yeah.
And then it got into once in a blue moon, you know, he'd come in on a little bit of a lesser time and talk about us winning a tournament, interviewing us. And it all happened there.
Freddie was a star at the University of Houston, where he was twice named first-team All-American. But his collegiate career didn't end in glory at the NCAA championships, but rather with a rash decision to turn pro during the summer before his senior year. So you turn pro and enter the Long Beach Queen Mary Open. Was that your first event?
It was. I lost in the U.S. Amateur. I went back to Long Beach. And before school, I wanted to play a little bit, so I went to this golf course. It was called El Dorado. I drove up there, and there were some signs up there about a golf tournament. So I went in, and the gentleman I talked to was Larry Benson. Never forget Larry. And I asked him if I could play in the tournament as an amateur, and he goes, I'm sorry, we have a few amateur qualifyings, and they're already done, but if you want to play as a pro, you can. And we just laughed. And so the next day he said, come out and we'll play. You can play with me in a practice round, which I thought was nice. So I played and I went in and signed up as a pro. That's the story.
You
why? I can't even make up anything. I turned pro that practice round.
By accident?
Maybe the greatest thing I ever did.
Yeah.
Or maybe the worst thing I ever did. I know it was the greatest thing I ever did.
Yeah.
I won $1,800. I was paired with Mark O'Meara. And I called home Sunday night. And my dad hung up. And I went, wow. And the people I was staying with, they knew my parents very, very well. And they said, yeah, they've known all along. You know, they kept calling school. And so I called back. But my mom, she answered, and I talked to her for quite a while and explained, I don't even know what I'm doing, but I just won $1,800. And I just entered the tour school, which is another story. I borrowed the people's truck that I was staying with, the Jose's. I drove up and stayed in their truck and qualified there.
How long
there.
After the Queen Mary Open was
it
that?
Was, well, that would be in the off season, and then the tour school, I think, was in November.
Yeah.
And that was the first qualifying. Then I went to Fresno and played the second one.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mark O'Meara again, his roommate had missed the cut, so then I went and stayed with him. But the first three or four days, I stayed in this truck, shaved in the clubhouse. I mean, it's kind of a weird story, but at the time I had no clue. If I didn't get my tour card, I'd be playing, you know, as a pro. But that's how it turned out.
First win on tour was the 83 Kemper Open at Congressional, right?
Yes.
And it was kind of strange. You were played in the last group and it finished an hour behind the group in front. What was that about?
Well, I shot 77. T.C. Chin shot 76, and Scott Simpson shot 77. On 18 at Congressional, which is an unreal hole,
yeah.
I drove it 100 miles down there and hit really a poor wedge, but I ended up having a three and a half footer to tie. And I'm like, you know, am I more nervous about making this or shooting 77? And I made it to get in this playoff, and it was with Barry Jekyll and Dr. Gil Morgan.
Yeah.
And then the three of us, we all tied. And then I won on the second playoff hole on a par three. I hit a 5-iron to about 2 feet. And if you watch the video, the putt did go in because I have a trophy, but it barely went in. But that was the long, long day, and we all played poor.
Yeah, I remember that run took so long. It was, the golf course was so tough.
We finished an hour after the group in front of us, an hour.
How often did Payne Stewart remind you that he beat you in the Southwest Conference?
Yeah, you got it down. Payne Stewart would remind you of a lot of things.
Yeah.
Payne Stewart, you know, would jab you, but we were very close friends. I thought he was an extremely great player. I liked watching him hit balls because of his swing, which I felt like our swings were not identical, but they were close in the pace of it and how we hit the ball. So we played a little bit, and he's one of a kind.
Yeah.
He was one of a kind.
He was. He glued my shoes together at the PGA Championship.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm sure you're not the only guy.
Despite the slow play component of his first victory,
Freddie's career on the PGA Tour was turbocharged. A fan favorite and the first American to top the official world golf rankings, he won 15 times on tour. He played in 5 Ryder Cups. And Freddie's casual style was so perfectly suited for the World Cup, the Skins Games, and other off-season events, he was dubbed the King of the Silly Season. He was also twice selected as the PGA Tour's Player of the Year.
It's been an unbelievable year, and because of all my friends, they actually voted me the best player, and thanks a lot.
Fred's biggest moment came in 1992 when he arrived at Augusta National as the world number one, the leading money winner on tour, and riding a hot streak that included 2 wins and 2 second place finishes in the preceding month.
Now look, this may come as a shock to you, but I wasn't always the world-class athlete you see in front of you today. When I turned pro, I was a zit-ridden 17-year-old with a very non-threatening 5 handicap. And needless to say, my future in the game did not seem secure, yet I managed to scratch and claw my way into the 1992 Masters. Freddie drove down Magnolia Lane in a Mercedes that year, and I was in a 1973 AMC Pacer with a cracked windshield. And one of us left with a green jacket in a Mercedes.
You know, in 92, I imagine one of your concerns was my presence in the field. That was my only Masters.
Is that right?
Yeah, it was the only one I played. You open with 69, 67 and find yourself a shot back. Were you kind of a believer then?
I'm always a believer in myself. I have a lot of confidence. I don't go around telling you that I'm ready. I see no reason, because I think people know you're ready. In that time, like you said, I had won twice. So I knew, and I loved my pairing on Saturday with Ray. Each day kind of went out there in a few lucky breaks. We got rained out on Saturday, so I got to come out Sunday morning and play 4 holes. I birdied 2 of them. There weren't 30,000 people around. You know, they were all making their way there, so I felt good about that. You know, I played at, I think, 8 o'clock, and I had like a 2:50 tee time, so I went back and slept.
You went back and slept?
Yeah, it was no problem to sleep. It just kind of wasn't a big deal to go play those 4 holes.
I'd like to break the final day into 3 parts. Let's start with 1 through 11. There were some ups and downs.
Yeah. I know all kinds of scores. There's just something about that last round, and I pull hooked it into the 9th fairway. Beautiful second shot in the green. Didn't pull hook it, but hooked it into the hazard on 2, made 6. And I fatted an iron on the 3rd hole, and we're going up the 3rd fairway, and Joe, my caddy, looks at me and says, "Will you grab a glove and get in the game?" Like, normally we joke. This was stern, and I hit an 8 iron. So the 3rd hole back then was a 2 iron and a sand wedge.
Yeah.
And I hit an 8 iron a foot and made birdie, and then everything just kind of started to settle down and went my way, and then I played a really good round of golf.
Fred was playing in the final pairing with 3rd round leader Craig Perry.
Craig Perry was struggling. So really the guy that was coming on strong was Ray Floyd.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no idea how he birdied, but he was on 14, so I'm on 12.
Could you hear the roar?
Oh, the roar was unreal.
With his mentor mounting a charge, Fred had 2 obstacles to overcome in order to secure the green jacket, Ray Floyd and Ray's Creek.
Like everyone, you know, hit it over the bunker. Sounds so easy. Well, I block it, but I hit it solid, and I'm looking at it, and it hit so far down the bank that it didn't pick up any steam, and it just stayed there.
Yeah.
And we're walking up there, and there is a rules official guy coming down, and I'm walking over the bridge, and I'm yelling at him.
Stay away.
I don't want anyone to breathe near that. I didn't know if it's anchored up on a pillow and it's going to fall in. All I kept thinking about was, if I fluff this chip, I could have hit a driver off this lie.
Yeah.
It's going to hit the hill and roll right back into the water. At that time, I used max fly balls, and there was a max fly in the water. So I chip this up there, and it rolls up a foot, and I scoop the ball out. Same number, a 1, and it's got Woozy's name on it. And my ball should have been an inch or curled up next to his. And that's why people say, why'd you scoop it out? Because you could see it, max fly 1. And then I went on. I knew I had, you know, 13 and 15,
and
par 5.
You'd Ray breathing down your neck.
Well, actually, when I got, you know, on 12, the only board's to 11. Well, they didn't put it up. So when you get up there, you don't see a board until you make the turn on 13. And then sure enough, Floyd, now I think he's maybe two back or one back. I made a great birdie on 14. So that put me two up. So when Ray's name went up, I was one up on him. And then 15, I drove it down behind those trees. So I aimed the 7-iron and hooked it around. I said, Joe, this is not a problem. My only problem is if I smoke it and get going too hard. And he goes, it's impossible. And then I had the easiest pitch in the world, and I was so nervous, I kind of fluffed it 15 feet short and two-putted and made par.
Yeah.
But that shot never scared me at all, not for a second. And I was not going to lay up. No way did I want that 90-yard shot.
By the time he reached the 18th green, a three-putt was all he needed.
When I won on 18, Ray Floyd was there, and that was amazing.
Well, this is rapid fire, Freddie. And for those of you that don't know the rules, you're probably communists. Somebody start a clock. If you were a zoo animal, what would you be?
Probably a gorilla.
A gorilla?
Yeah. I feel like I'm pretty thick. I'm not strong, and I'm not saying they're not, but a gorilla.
Yeah. What's your all-time favorite movie?
Tin Cup.
Are you superstitious?
You better believe it.
Who was your celebrity crush as a kid?
I Dream of Jeannie.
Barbara Eden?
Yeah, she was. Mm. I would say that too, but the Jeannie part was very, very, very nice.
Who's the toughest player you faced in a Tuesday money game?
Ray Floyd or Phil Mickelson.
Who's the best trash talker on the course?
Payne Stewart.
Yes, he was.
Payne Stewart.
He was. Phil's pretty good, too.
Yeah. Future. I don't mind Phil because I know Phil so well.
Yeah.
I can't give him everything.
The worst dancer in PGA Tour history is?
Me. I've never danced. So the worst dancer, I'll give you a dancer, Jack Nicklaus.
Well,
We'll throw him a bone.
Yeah. Favorite place to eat on tour?
Old days, In-N-Out with Joe. We would drive on the West Coast 30 minutes for an In-N-Out.
Well, that is the end of Rapid Fire, and as always in Freddie Couples style, it was extremely casual. Yeah. Who christened you Boom Boom?
This is Vance Hefner and Gary McCord.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. And it stuck with Gary McCord, but I was playing with them in Atlanta, and I was on the 11th hole. Thursday, you play with them. I knocked it on the 11th hole. Friday, I knocked it on the afternoon, the 11th hole and two. I know it was Vance said, boom, boom. And then it stuck, and then McCord started calling me Boom Boom everywhere we went, and that's all he calls me even on TV. So that's Vance and Gary.
And is it true that you gave bones?
I did bones, yeah. Yes. Yeah, knee-knocking bones.
Yeah.
Went to hang out with him in Athens, and he's a very good man. He and Joey, I had more meals with than probably anyone I've ever, especially Joe, but Bones went to a lot of them. And that's what the tour is kind of all about. But Bones, I gave him the nickname Bones.
You know, on this show, I ask players who they most like to be paired with, and you are, without question, you know, the most common answer. Who do you like to play with?
On the PGA Tour?
Yeah.
Well, Davis Love, Greg Norman, and I got paired with him a lot, Nick Faldo, a lot at the British Opens, but I always played well when I played with Davis. Norman was just such an amazing guy to be paired with. And Faldo, it was not overpowering magic, but it was magic how he played. I mean, there'd be a hole 480 yards back then, which was uncommon. And I'd have a driver out trying to figure out how I could hit a 3-iron, and he'd take a 1-iron out, then hit another. You know, he played a certain way that no one else played, and I just enjoyed playing with him. But if I was a little bit older and closer to them, obviously, I would say Jack and Arnold. But Davis was a treat. We played a lot alike, so I could learn up from Davis.
Well, towards the end of your regular tour career, you got to play with Tiger at the beginning of his regular tour career.
I will tell you this. So I played the practice round with him and Norman and Tripp Keeney at Augusta. And when we finished, I asked Paul Marchand, I said, Paul, what did you just see there? Is this guy all they say? Is he going to win 19 majors or 18 majors and pass Jack or tie Jack? I don't see it. So we go a little further and he starts, you know, the career goes, he wins his first event. And I played with him in a tournament in the Philippines. And I went, wow, this is a totally different ball game. It's no practice round. At the World Series, I made a 30-footer on the 54th hole to shoot 63. All that did was put me in his group on Sunday. He was behind me still, but I passed a lot of people. I have played with Tiger where he won. He won the World Series, I don't know what year, but...
Well, he won it 8 times.
Yeah, so pick one. But it's fun to watch him. I had some tears in my eyes when he won in Atlanta. Mm. I think the world of the guy, and I think what he's done for golf is amazing, because we all know what Arnold did and Jack did for golf and several others. I don't want to say 10 more years. We can get 5 more years like we just saw. That's more than enough.
It'd be amazing.
More Faherty will continue after a few words from our sponsor. We've been doing Faherty for a while now, but every episode I learn something new from our guests. Just like Farmers Insurance knows a thing or two because they've seen a thing or two. So, thanks to Farmers for supporting my show.
We are Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
All right then, now back to the show. Few locations have stricken as much fear into the hearts of players than 17 at the Stadium Course. It's a subject I discussed with the man behind the curtain, former Commissioner Tim Finchem, in this clip from the bunker.
One time Seve was here on a Saturday morning, he gets me and he says, Tim, I want to talk to you about 17. I said, what is it, Seve? He says, well, there's no bailout. You know, you need something.
There's nobody to bail out.
I said, Seve, it's 132 yards. Why do you want to bail out? And he says, well, no, you need the bunker in the back or on the left, a place where you can be firm and maybe keep. I said, Seve, let me ask you a question. Did you make the cut yesterday? Because I haven't looked at the number. He said, no, I missed the cut. I said, what'd you do at 17? He says, nothing to do with this conversation. He said, this is not about me.
Yeah, oh, no.
I said, no.
Oh, no.
He made 7, missed the cut by 2.
TPC Sawgrass may have bedeviled Seve, but it's been a great course for Fred, who's notched 2 wins there, including one when he looked like he still belonged in third period algebra.
Considering you were a 24-year-old whippersnapper, that was quite a performance.
It was a good first round, and I finally thought, wow. And then the second day, I had an early tee time, which back then it was in March, and it's kind of a softer course. And I just went on, and I just kept making birdies, and I think I had 2 eagles. I ended up shooting 64, which put me way up there. And I played with some unbelievable people on Saturday and Sunday. Lee Trevino would be one, Seve Ballesteros, Lanny Watkins, and Jim Thorpe were all up there.
After the third round, you find out that you're paired with Tom Watson and Seve the next day. What do? Do you go to the range? Do you sleep?
Well, there were a few times where I would call. Back then you called. Now it comes on your phone. Hi, it's Fred Couples calling. Who am I playing with? You're playing at 2:20 with Tom Watson and Seve Ballesteros, and you hang up, honestly, and you sit there and you go, oh, Jesus, that's a problem. You know, I never played with them. Who would I rather have had, Jay Hawes and Davis Love? You better believe it. That would have been a great call. I'd hang up and go, I'm ready. But they're idols, and they still are. I'm on the Champions Tour. Tom Watson, I didn't play much this year, but Hawaii, he shot his age or under his age. And I'm like, you know, that's the guy I want to play with. And I played much better than I did at Augusta with him.
Winning the Players at that stage got you a 10-year exemption. I mean, did you worry about such a thing?
When you look back at things, and people, even now, they say a 2-year exemption. So my first year on tour, I played the last 13 tournaments in a row. I knew if you skipped a tournament, then you had to come back, you had to Monday qualify. So I made 13 cuts in a row, and I was making $700. And earlier, I might have said, you know, I don't know how you're tired playing golf, but I was physically exhausted from not, I don't think I ever went home. And then at Pensacola, I had a great finish, so I was exempt. I finished 53rd on the money list.
Was it top 60 at that?
At that time, yes. Okay. And then otherwise, you went to Monday qualifyings. And then TPC, I won a 10-year exemption. That was my career.
And then you win it again in 96, closing with a 64.
Yeah.
What was it about that course that just clicked?
I could play it. You know, I've heard a couple guys say, oh, I won there and it's shocking the way I play. And I don't play much different. The guy I'm talking about would be Phil, But I just knew how to get it around. I didn't really challenge it. And I challenge most every shot, every golf course. But you can't really challenge that course. It'll eat you up. And so on the last day, I played really, really well. I got a break of a lifetime. I mean, my ball was pushed on 16. Then I go to birdie 17. I think Tommy Tolles was up there in Montgomery. Mm-hmm. And so then I had a huge lead and finished well ahead of Tommy, who was leading at the time.
If you needed proof that you play well on the golf course, in the first round in 1999, you hit your tee shot in the water.
Yeah.
What happened then?
Well, then I was 6 or 7 over. And I just said, give me a ball. And I think I teed it up. And I flew it in for, what do they call that, a hole in three?
A hole in three, yeah. I think it is. Yeah. True or false, you once went to the Open Championship without your passport?
I didn't have it, so I had to wait another day, and I had it FedEx to me.
Yeah.
Did not have it. Didn't know you needed it.
Did someone ever break into your house and tamper with your golf clubs? And was it a jealous boyfriend?
No.
No, they didn't?
No. You're on the right track. The jealous boyfriend? No.
No?
No, it was someone else.
There's been all kinds of adjectives over the years to describe the sort of Freddie vibe, if you like, you know, relaxed, cool. How would you describe it?
I guess, you know, just some of the things. I mean, nonchalant is a word I get all the time. I don't mind it. You know, lazy. I don't mind that. I've been called lazy, and I am. I wish I would have given golf a little more.
You see, I wouldn't see that as lazy. I would say that's an efficient use of time.
No, it is. But when you go to a golf tournament and you see a rider or a rider sees you and you're hitting next to Davis and you're kind of screwing around and Davis is just hitting shot after shot after shot, anything can come up. In the gallery, some people say some things, but no one's really said anything that would affect me either way. You're a great player. Or, you know, I watched you play and you weren't worth the bus money coming here. I kind of look at him, you know, and thank you.
In 92, you started 7 behind Davis. And came back to win. Was golf easy for you at that point? Did it feel easy?
Well, I was 7 behind, so I had a good last day. And again, we all know Davis and I are like this. And I think after I beat him, one of the comments was that was very difficult. There were 30,000 people and 5 of them were rooting for me. And the other 34,995 were rooting for him. It really was like that. I'm 59 now, so I can say it was kind of easy. When I played well, I drove the ball well. That made the game seem easy for me. Some people would go home and bang balls for days and days. I would go home and just, I don't want to get near them. And when I come back, if I pick it up fairly fast, my whole thing was I'd take a lot of time off and I'd always come back for a tournament to try and just play in it to get the kinks out. And then that next week, I needed to get moving. And sometimes I would go and do really, really well, which would give you a lot of confidence. But yeah. I didn't play a lot. I was not someone who wanted to play 28 or 30 tournaments. I didn't like to travel, and I liked being at home. I think a lot of us like being at home, but it's a job where you gotta go.
I heard once that you spent so much time on the sofa that you've been reupholstered twice.
Probably. When I get home, I don't do a lot. And I do that very, very well. People always laugh. And now I have friends that I've had a long time, and they know. You know, my goal is not to go play 18, go to the mall and run around the mall, and then come home and get on a bike because they want to go bike riding. I do like to play golf at home. But when I'm done, I change my shoes at the house when I'm done. So I don't go in the locker room. I'm not a hanger arounder. I like to play, say goodbye to the boys, and I get home. And on the PGA Tour, I was a lot like that too. I didn't see any reason to hang out at the golf course for 4 hours. I just didn't see it.
Is it up? And that's right where you want.
God forbid that I needed to work on my putting, I would go putt for 15 minutes. And I figured if I can't do better in 15 minutes, another hour is not gonna help me.
You think that that behavior led to some people believing that maybe you didn't care as much as you did?
I know when I'm mad, sometimes I play better. And I know when I'm lackadaisical and don't care, sometimes I play better. But there are other times people come watch and they'll say, wow, I just happened to watch you play like holes 7, 8, 9 at LA, and you were hocking putts. And I'm like, it's embarrassing to me. But sometimes in my mind, I try and turn a clock the other way and get me to be turned, like, do something really stupid. Try and drive it over a hazard that I could never drive it over. But maybe I got over by a yard and made a birdie. Now all of a sudden I think I'm going to birdie every hole. But if I hit it in the water, I don't care. So that's the don't care part. And that kind of I'm not proud of. You know, I pocket, it's not a good thing to do. Well, I haven't done it in 100 years, but I used to.
Yeah, but like you say, sometimes it kind of accidentally is. Every golfer, every amateur golfer certainly is familiar with the fact that, you know, I've tried so hard and so hard, screw this, I give up. And then all of a sudden you hit that one shot. Once you lose caring about the result, you actually pay attention to what you are doing.
Right.
Instead of what might happen.
You're correct. So Joe LaCava, 22 years, was my caddy. So every now and then, I would tell Joe, I'm practicing. I'm down here in the corner. I don't want anyone to bother me. And if they do bother me, I will fire you. I will fire you today. Guys will come down. Davis Love, Justin Leonard, Greg Norman might walk by. Joe's job was to say, look, not now, fellas. That was his line. And then they would turn around. And some people who didn't know me would think, wow, what a jerk. But I would go hit balls. And next thing you know is you'd be out there for an hour and you hit 15 balls. Hey, Davis, what's going on? Jay, tell me about what are the kids doing? You know,
yeah.
And then, you know, Joe would be mad. So my job would be to tell Joe, your job is to keep him away.
He's kind of doing that again, no?
Yeah. No, he's doing it very, very well with Tiger. But
yeah.
I didn't feel the need to hit balls for 3 hours. I would do it in stretches. So if you were my teacher and we came here, we would do it for an hour and a half. Then we'd have lunch. Then we might go chip. Then I might go on the golf course and hit 6 to 8, 10 drives on a really good par four. And that was what Paul and I did all the time. We'd go pick out a really tough driving hole instead of staying on the range. And that's one thing that I really, really enjoyed. And then what it also did is it just helped me visualize shots. I can't tell you how well I started to play when I started standing behind the ball and seeing a big high cut or a low shot into the wind. And then I never even thought about my swing. I would just picture how I wanted the ball to go. It sounds easy, and it sounds like you should do it all the time, but when it worked, it was very, very easy.
Golf's a funny game. Tell me a funny story.
It's kind of funny because you had to be there, and I'll bring up my best friend on the tour, Davis Love. We're playing a World Cup in Spain. Somehow they flew us there privately, so we invited two the PGA Tour guys that work in the fitness trailers, just in case maybe I got hurt or he got hurt, or just to come with us. Thursday we play and I tweak my back during the round. So we go back and they work on me and I'm like, I don't know if I can play. And so Doogie gives me a pill, which to this day, I think he gave me a wrong one. He thought it was an anti-inflammatory. I couldn't get out of bed. Davis is pounding on my door. I was sound asleep, couldn't wake up. He got me changed, and I was so groggy, and I got to the range, and I hit a few balls, and now it's, you know, 8:30-ish or 8:20, and I double bogey the first hole. It's a 3-wood and a pitching wedge. Second hole had a pond right in front of the tee, like right there, and I topped it in the pond, and here's where it got funny, and I looked at him, and I went, wow, like I was high. I went, wow, and he burst out laughing. And then somehow, 2 days later, we won. About it till this day.
He roofied you?
Well, Davis didn't, but the doctor did, yeah. And we flew him over there privately, and we had a good time, and we were doing everything.
Let's talk a little bit about your back. Can you trace it back to one specific moment where you hurt it, or did it just sort of gradually?
Well, I mean, the major time was in Doral. The facts, I was in the last group with John Houston, and I hit a ball, and I honestly felt like a grenade went off in my back, and my teacher was there. He was there on a Sunday. It's hot there anyway, but I started, the sweat was just pouring down my body. I couldn't turn, and Paul came and got under me and was staring at me and said, are you okay? And I said, no, because it just looked like another swing, but it was like I was paralyzed. So I stood there leaning on my club, and then, of course, the tour guys from the van came, and they got me in a cart, and I went there, and I said, look, I play in 20 minutes. You got to help me here. And the guy said, you will not be playing. I stayed in I got it checked back into Doral. I stayed there till Thursday afternoon. And honestly, a week later, I went to see a back doctor and I was bending down, touch. He thought, what just happened to you? I was back to normal. My body froze. I didn't feel good enough to swing, but I could touch my toes, lean, do everything he wanted me to do. And then it happened, you know, maybe 3 or 4 years after that again.
Yeah.
And then it happened to me in Tampa during a pro-am where 2 or 3 groups, I'm laying on the tee and they come walking right by me and hitting. I mean, I'll never forget, guy right there hitting. I can't move. And I normally it's 3 or 4 days, just locked up, afraid to move because it hurts so bad.
You have your clubs a little longer?
I do.
Yeah, does that sort of minimize the, you know, bending over?
I went through a long time where I warmed up with my rescue club, where that's all I hit on the range. I would just go before I played. At Augusta, this year, I never hit an iron. I hit nothing but woods, never putted or chipped. I thought anything that bend over would kill me. And I went right to the first tee thinking that I was going to shoot, you know, 75 or 76 on a good day. But I kept getting it around. But I can do it. I don't want to have a back brace on. I don't want to feel that bad just to play golf at 58 or 59.
Yeah.
I can get through it. It's just when I want to play and it goes out, I get a little depressed.
You know, Freddie, there have only been 2 other guests that I've had that we've had to make 2 shows out of, and that was Jordan and Phil. I think you're going to be the 3rd. Yeah. So stay tuned. There's going to be more of this, whatever it is.
Now you see why I've wanted Freddie on the show for so long. He's funny, he's got a great perspective on the game, and he's almost as windswept and elegant as I am. And even though we've already covered his college career, some of his biggest wins, and that green jacket he picked up in Augusta, there's still so much more to go. Thanks for joining me, Faherty fans. That's our show for tonight. You can catch me on Facebook, Instagram, and FaherTwit. You can also find more Faherty podcasts presented by Farmers Insurance on Faherty.com and your favorite podcast provider. Go to Apple Podcast, Stitcher, Art19 or Google Play. Search Faherty and subscribe. If you love the show, why wouldn't you? Be sure to leave a rating.